Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 112 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Ryan Davis, and I'm here, as always, with Sean Sears. How's it going?
Doing good. We finally have a win to talk about, so that's exciting.
Yeah, let's go ahead and dive in. We'll talk about yesterday's win and then a little bit about why they won. And I think it was an outstanding effort from John Lester that's really positive. And then segment two, I think we have more trade stuff to talk about, more speculation, I guess. Some things that may happen, some things that are really unlikely. And then we'll talk a little bit about Chris Bryant's injury. I think David Bodie's probably headed to Chicago today. We'll see when that lineup comes out any minute now. And then final segment, we'll just do our usual rundown of the NL Central. So John Lester was really good yesterday, and that was outstanding to see. He went six innings. He allowed one run. He actually went six shutout innings and then started the seventh after 97 pitches and allowed a homer to AJ Pollock. But six innings, one run, four hits, no walks, seven strikeouts. Carl Edwards Jr. went two innings, setting up Pedro Strop for the save in the ninth. For the Cubs, Albert Almora had two doubles, and Javier Baez pinch hit and worked some magic in the eighth inning, and they won 2-1. So Lester, really good. We'll get back to that in a minute. But today's game is another 120. Old faithful Tyler Chatwood is starting against former Cubs prospect Zach Godley. Godley has not been all that good this season. He has a 4.65 ERA in 110 and a third innings, and he also has a whip of 1.54. So back to Lester. The thing that I was worried about, even when he was getting outs in his decent games in the first half of the season, was he wasn't missing bats, and he was walking a little bit too many. A lot of his peripherals were bad. I mean, let's be honest, his peripheral numbers, like his FIP, his strikeout rate, a lot of that stuff is the worst of his career, and yet he had posted, you know, a really good ERA, and, you know, for the old-timers who really love pitcher record, it was a great record, 12-2. Now, yesterday's game looked like vintage John Lester to me.
Yeah, John Lester looked like John Lester that we saw 2 years ago. Like, this is the guy that almost no-hit the Cardinals, John Lester, in his first year with the Cubs. He looked good. Joe Maddon talked about it in his press conference like a couple weeks ago. He was saying, like, you know, Lester's going to have games where, you know, he's going to look like he did against the Cardinals last week, but then he'll have games where, you know, he's locating his pitches, his cutter's hitting that corner on both sides. He looked good. He looked really good.
Yeah, that's what you really have to see in the postseason from him. And I have faith that you will. Like, just show me that you can do this occasionally throughout the season, and I'll have faith that in October you'll be doing it then too. Because there's no reason not to trust him at this point. I think anybody who thinks, oh, he's losing it, oh, you know, you can't trust this guy, calm down. This is a guy with, what, three World Series rings? And he's been just absolutely lights out in the playoffs for the most part.
Yeah, battle-tested doesn't do it enough justice, seriously.
Right, yeah. I mean, this is he's probably not a Hall of Famer, but if you look at just, like, the guys over the course of this last generation or the last 30 years who have defined playoff success, like, if you took that phrase, defining playoff success, and created a 25-man roster, Lester is in, like, the middle of that rotation with Andy Pettitte and a few others.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I would have to agree. I don't think he's necessarily a Hall of Fame type player, but he definitely, I mean, he could very well get his jersey retired for the Cubs. He's been great. He's easily one of the best free agent acquisitions in Cub history and potentially Chicago sports history. He's just, you know, the instant the Cubs acquired him, they've done nothing but be one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best team in baseball. So,
yeah, that's a great way of saying it. He had probably his best season of his career with the Cubs by many measures. He almost won a Cy Young, came in second to Max Scherzer. But I had never thought about it, but yeah, that there's a really good case for him to get his jersey retired, which you wouldn't think for a guy who basically started with the team at age 31 and is only going to have, what, 6 years with the team. You think of retired numbers as, like, Hall of Famers and, you know, Greg Maddux, who there's kind of an emotional attachment there. And but yeah, I could definitely see them putting number 34 on a flag and saying, hey, thanks for the World Series.
Yeah, him and Kerry Wood, just an easy thing to throw up on the flagpoles, and I don't think anyone would really complain. So,
I think there would be people who complain about Kerry Wood, but you know, again, that's another like emotional retirement, not one that's based in like having great seasons, because Kerry Wood was only good for like what, the first 5 years of his career.
Yeah, that's a valid point. It's a very good point. Yeah, not a superstar by any means, but was really fun to watch.
Yeah, very fun to watch, especially in those early years. But yeah, that's what I wanted to say. John Lester, really good yesterday. That was just such an amazing thing to see. I liked this way more than the games where it was like six innings, no runs, five hits, two walks, two strikeouts. Like those games sucked. I mean, they were great because he didn't give up runs, but those games were more indicative of an underlying problem and regression on the road. And this isn't a regression thing. He, you know, those strikeouts, missing bats, the curveball, the cutter, he was putting it where he wanted to. It was just great overall.
Yeah. That's a big thing. The strikeouts. I think he had six yesterday, right?
He had seven.
Seven. Oh, Johnny. Having a game.
And then Carl Edwards Jr., two great innings. Really pitch efficient. Only 22 pitches in two innings, 16 strikes. No hits, no walks, no runs, two strikeouts. About as good as you could ask Carl Edwards Jr. to be. And then Pedro Strop, really good in the ninth inning, despite a two-out, basically lost fly ball for a double. Like putting the tying run at second base, like that, like such a Cubs move. I wanted to pull out the run, Sano. Oh no!
Yeah, yeah. It was literally just like the most Cubs thing. I was like, of course they're gonna drop a ball in center field for a double. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but I guess Strope got out of it. So Pedro Strope, I guess we don't talk enough about that guy. We can talk about him briefly before we go to the second segment. But basically, as the fill-in closer for Brandon Morrow, I wrote something before the season where I made the case that Strope should be the closer and Morrow should be one of the bridge guys. My thought process was, this guy always gets hurt and you can't rely on him. Put him in the innings where he's basically interchangeable with Carl Edwards and Justin Wilson, all these other guys. So when he does go on the DL, you don't miss him. It's basically everything lines up the same way, except he's gone and you still have the same guy in the ninth inning. I think Strope would be an outstanding closer just because he's so consistent.
Yeah, I mean, that's really like, you know, I think people think he has like control issues sometimes, or like people just assume like, you know, oh, well, he's not the closer for a reason or blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, no, the only reason he's not is because the Cubs have happened to buy guys that are, you know, literally just closers. So, I mean, Strope has been great. He's first off a great person in the clubhouse. He's always light, funny, keeps things mild. Him and the relievers love him. He's like adopted Randy Rosario as like his infant child man person, which is really funny to see. but yeah, he's great. He's got an excellent slider, his two seamer bites. He just executes and goes out there and does it every day. Just about, he's been a stud. And I like, it's crazy how undervalued he is to Cubs fans and just people in baseball. Cause I think outside of Cub fandom, not too many people know who Pedro Strop is outside of maybe like the Dodgers or the Giants who have run into him in the postseason. But
I think Cardinals fans know who he is, but that's for a different reason.
yeah. We don't have to go into that reason. But
it floored me. I have a friend who's a Cardinals fan who the only time he ever watches the Cubs is when they're playing the Cardinals. He doesn't watch anything but the Cardinals. And his opinion of Pedro Strop is, man, that guy just sucks. I was like, well, I understand why you feel that way.
Yeah.
you only see him against the Cardinals.
Yeah, I could see that. But doesn't suck. Pretty cool. Very good reliever. Just awesome how the story behind him is just going to like live forever in Chicago lore with him coming over in the Jake Arrieta trade. I mean, it just, every year that trade looks better and better. It's crazy.
And I've said and written this before, but there's no more consistent with longevity reliever in Cubs history than Strope. And what you said about him in the clubhouse and with the team is very on point. And I think there's maybe not everyone who hasn't been in the clubhouse knows this, but you know, obviously, if you think about teams and the different demographics, they kind of split off into their own little groups. Not that anybody dislikes anybody else, but you know, it's just natural when you have that many guys from different backgrounds. They kind of clumped together in these kind of comfortable groups. And among the Spanish-speaking players on the team, among those players, Strop is basically the leader. You know, if you wanted to look at like the vocal leaders of the different segments, Rizzo is the leader of basically the rest of the team, the, you know, the American-born players, and among the Spanish-speaking or non-American-born players, it's basically Pedro Strop is the leader.
Yeah, yeah, I would call them each other's spokespersons for the other people's. He's just, oh my gosh, he at one point, for some reason, he has his iPad connected to like the sound system in the locker room, and he just like will randomly blare like the horns you hear at the beginning of like a DJ Khaled song, or like just like 4 seconds of Vamos a la Playa, which anyone that took Spanish in high school in the last 15 years probably knows every word. It's just like, it makes no sense, but it's so funny just because he's like sitting there with his iPad, just like giggling in his locker room stall. It's just like, what's going on?
Have you discovered that in the home clubhouse, when you're trying to interview people, Pedro Strop or whoever's in charge of it will just be playing music ungodly loud?
Yeah, and
no. What a horrible thing that is to do to the writers.
He does it. Yeah, he was doing it during one of Kelly Krull from NBC had to do like a standing video with like Schwarber for like, I don't know, like maybe a minute, and there's just like mariachi bands playing in the background for some reason.
Oh man. Oh well, we don't have to bore people with our notes from Clubhouse antics, but let's go ahead and go to our second segment. We have some trade discussion, and then we'll talk a little bit about Chris Bryant and David Bodie. So we kind of talked about it while we paused. The lineup's still not out. It's almost 10 o'clock for a 1:20 start. That's a little odd. So I feel like there's probably a move that's happening. Not necessarily a big move, but you know, it wouldn't shock me to hear that Bryant's going on the DL. But the main thing is, I know David Bodie was not in the lineup for Iowa yesterday. I have to assume he's in the big leagues today, especially with, you know, Baez with that kind of wonky knee injury and Bryant not being able to play.
Yeah, no, I'd assume it's probably safe to assume that David Bodie, if he's not up here today, at some point will be up here just because, like you said, I mean, Bryant, Baez, just the Cubs need some help in the infield. And I don't know if you want to put Tommy La Stella in there consistently. He's great in matchups, but he's not the guy you necessarily want all the time there at third base or second base, or moving half at third is clearly not ideal. So bring David Bodie up, clearly having a great year in Iowa, having a great year for the Cubs. So yeah, I'd be surprised if we don't see Bodie at least on the roster, maybe not in the lineup, but yeah, on the roster today.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would even go as far as to say I would expect when the Cubs lineup does come out, I would be kind of surprised if David Bodie is not at third base today. Even knowing if he's on the roster at this point. But yeah, Tommy La Stella, you mentioned him. Kind of because of all the good pinch hit at bats he's had, kind of under the radar having a bad year. He's not a power hitter. And if you look at him, you would say, oh, definitely like, you know, a singles hitter. But historically, he's been like a doubles guy who can hit the occasional home run. He's really just been a slappy singles hitter all season. And I know he's had like a decent batting average and an okay on base, but there's no slugging. So I think his OPS is like 650. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's not very good. He's usually like, he's always pretty good for like a couple like pull like to the right, like field bleachers, like home run type of guy, just because he's so quick on the inside pitch. Excuse me, but so many teams are aware of that now, I think, and so they're pretty much pitching him outside or forcing him to drive balls that if they are coming on the inside had a lot of movement or curve balls on the inside corner. So yeah, he's not really doing the greatest this year, unfortunately. Yeah, he's on base percentage like 340. That's like okay, but I mean Tommy La Stella is a guy that's like, you know, like was at 389 last year, usually around 360, 370s. We're going to see Tommy, and right now he's just not hitting for a lot of power. And I guess it's okay because in these moments that he's coming up in, he just needs to push the ball through. He's got 17 RBIs, I guess, in about 129 plate appearances. That's not bad, but yeah, could be a lot better. Could be a lot better.
And I don't have it in front of me. I know he has a lot of pinch hits this season, so he's got like a really good, you know, average off the bench, essentially. Right. So he's valuable to the team, but really that's kind of all he hitter and a spot starter.
He's got 31 hits on the year, 26 of them are singles. He's only got 5 doubles. So yeah, there you go.
That sounds right. Yep. All right, let's move on a little bit since still not seeing the lineup yet. There's more trade talk. Of course, the Cubs have lost out on a few of their targets already. They're kind of setting us up for a disappointing trade deadline, but there's, because it's Theo Epstein, there's always that kind of inkling that maybe there's still a big move left for them. And one thing that we've talked about is that there are starters that are available that are, that could or should be their targets that also come with relievers on those same teams that could or should be those targets. And the matchups that we talked about are Jay Happ with Sunghyun Oh on the Blue Jays, and then for the White Sox, I'm going to torture people more with this, James Shields and Joaquin Soria, who's been a really good reliever for them. He's basically been like a lights out closer, which, you know, for a team that's trying to get a draft pick in the White Sox, the last thing they need is a good closer. So those two matchups, I feel like, would be really good deals for the Cubs if they can find a way to make it happen. What do you think? Do you have a preference for one over the other? And what else is out there that you think is worth talking about?
I honestly think I prefer the Soria and Shields deal, just because I think I have a little more maybe confidence in Soria than I do in like a guy like I always butcher his first name, so I'm not going to say it.
I probably said it wrong, but I tried to say it fast so no one would know.
It's Siong Wan, I believe. He's a 36-year-old reliever for the Blue Jays. He's only been in the league for like 3 years. I think he came over from the MPB, but he's having an okay season. I just think I trust Soria and Shields a little bit more. I was looking at his peripheral numbers. It's actually surprisingly okay. His FIP's at like 384 compared to his 14 ERA. He's got a K per nine, close to 10.5 strikeouts per game right now, or per nine innings. He's having an okay season, and I think about 10 of his 20 starts, he's gone six innings or longer. So, I mean, he looks good. I just I looked at Shields' stats, and outside of the FIP and the strikeouts, he's eating more innings. Soria seems like a better reliever altogether and might be able to be more reliable in those like late game situations as opposed to So that's kind of where I'm leading towards, because the Cubs, as much as they need a starter, I mean, if Darvish comes back and is healthy, or Chatwood for some miracle pulls it together, and, you know, Quintana and Hendricks go back to the guys we've seen, certainly all of a sudden the Cubs rotation looks a lot better. We're not sure that's going to happen, but, you know, I think when it comes down to it, the reliever portion of this, I think, is more important, because I have more faith in the Cubs starters pulling it together and being close to their career norms, as opposed to the bullpen being super reliable with Brandon Morrow on the back end.
Yeah. And, you know, James Shields doesn't have the best overall stats this year. And I think that's, you know, that's a fair point when people say that they don't want him. He's been much better than he was previous seasons. He's had a few really bad stinkers in the last month. He gave up 8 earned runs to the Astros, and then his last start, 6 earned runs in 4 innings to the Angels. But this is the key thing. The most pitches he's thrown in any game this year is 109, so it's not like he's being pushed to 120 pitches all the time. If I just run down the innings pitched over his last several games, so the last one was 4 with the 6 earned runs. Before that, 7 with 1 earned run, 6 2/3, 2 earned runs, 5 2/3 with 8, 6 2/3 with 1, 7 with 0, 4 2/3 with 2, but it was like 6 unearned runs, 6 with 3, 7 with 1, 6 with 7, 7 with 3, 7 with 3, 7 with 2, 7 1/3 with 1. So, I mean, this is a guy who goes 6 or 7 innings pretty much every time out, and most of those games is giving you a chance to win. That's really what the Cubs need right now.
Yeah, that really is. I mean, that's what this like we say it, I feel like every podcast, the Cubs need to add a guy that can eat innings. That's the biggest requirement. I mean, clearly you want them to do it effectively. They're not going to just add someone who's averaging like six runs a game and, you know, is going to have, you know, maybe 6 innings of awful baseball. We don't want that, clearly. But, you know, the Cubs' biggest thing is right now they just need to take some pressure off their bullpen, some pressure off their starters to go deep, and have a guy like James Shields, who is, you know, essentially crafted in the last couple of years a career out of navigating himself through 6 innings for a team.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. And I agree on Soria as the more talented reliever. As of 18 seconds ago, here is the lineup for the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo leading off at first, Abelard Mora Jr. at center field, Hayward in right, Wilson Contreras at catcher, Ian Happ at third base, wait for it. Kyle Schwarber in left field. Addison Russell at shortstop. Tyler Chatwood eighth in pitching, and David Bodie at second base.
There he is. So, not second, but third is Ian Happ. Interesting.
And the move, as predicted, today the Cubs placed third baseman Chris Bryant on the 10-day DL, retroactive to July 24th, with left shoulder inflammation, and recalled infielder David Bodie. So, nailed it.
Yeah, there it is. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, it just seemed obvious at this point, I think.
Yeah, I think you and I talked about it yesterday. We were pretty much expecting it. I mean, just when you talk about the shoulder and how he apparently aggravated it just swinging, like, ugh, that's not good.
That's a really bad sign. Yeah, this is one of those I don't expect it to be 10-day kind of things. Like, I think they're going to tell us it's going to be just 10 days, and then when the 10 days gets here, they're going to give it a little longer. And that's just really unfortunate. I've harped at this enough, but it's just been mismanaged from the start. It should have been a DL stint the second it started becoming a problem until it was much better, and then maybe a few more days after that just to be sure, and then go into the rest of the season. I just think they botched this.
Yeah, no, they really did, and that's disappointing because you don't see the Cubs front office or the team itself handle things like this, but with Bryant's injury and just kind of – I mean, the Cubs are in some trouble now for sure. I mean, he's definitely, you know, they put him on the 10-day, but I would be surprised if we see him before August 15th at this point now, because there's going to be a rehab stint again. It's going to be a whole thing. It's going to be a bummer. Thank God David Bodie's here and is playing as well as he has been. Let's hope he can continue to do that in the major league level. But yeah, the Cubs are going to need people to pick up some slack. The good news is they are, I guess, technically still the best team in the National League. They still hold the division lead. They're still, you know, playing good baseball for the most part. It's just going to be a lot harder now without Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, without Bryant, who would have thought that they could be 2.5 games up with the best record in the National League, with Bryant essentially offering you nothing since May, Rizzo being what he has been this year, even though he's been much better lately, still hasn't homered in like a month. You've basically, you know, at this point you have what, like a combined 23 home runs from those guys. Okay. That's a bit surprising that they're doing so well, but you know, at the same time, Javier Baez is having a borderline MVP conversation type season. Right. Wilson Contreras has been great. Kyle Schwarber has been very good. Jason Hayward has, you know, completely rebounded and been the guy that you thought you were signing a few years ago. So they've figured it out, but imagine how good this team would be if they had 2016 and 2016 Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, just insane. I mean, this team would be probably pushing the Red Sox right now for best record in all baseball. Probably could have been the first team to win. But I don't know why. The MLB loves to keep pointing out that the Red Sox are the fastest team to win 60 games, 65 games, 60, 70 games, whatever it may be. It's just like, yeah, they're the best team in baseball. That makes sense. Like, I don't know what.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean,
they're the borderline the 2001 Mariners right now.
Yeah, they really are. They're impressive. For what it's worth, I think I saw the Mariners played like 10 games less than the Red Sox did or something like that in 2001 before the first half somehow. I don't know. Some weird stat like that, but whatever. Red Sox are doing it. That's cool. But yeah, I mean, I think if they had these guys back to where we expect them to be all the time, which is 30 home run guys, 100 RBI plus, you know, on base percentage close, you know, pushing to 400 at sometimes, or yeah, 400. So I mean, like, these guys are just elite at just about everything. And I mean, they've been on base a bunch, like we've been seeing before, maybe not Rizzo as much up until recently, but yeah, they just haven't looked like themselves clearly. And it's a bummer because to think where these guys would be with those guys playing the way they would, it's, you know, the sky's the limit for the Cubs, honestly.
Yeah. But like you said, I mean, it would be surprising if Bryant is back before the middle of August. It could be longer than that. I don't want to speculate too much because, again, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what's going on with Chris Bryant's shoulder. I'm just kind of reading the situation as it kind of plays out. Mm-hmm. And the frustrating things have been, you know, not putting him on the DL from the start, kind of lying about what was going on with his shoulder. Then, you know, putting him on the DL and letting him rest, but then, I don't want to say rushing, but bringing him back with two games to go before the All-Star break when they could have just rested in those two games and let him go all the way through the break without swinging a bat at all, essentially. So those are things that I think are really upsetting about this season. And I'm hoping that this isn't the case, but I feel like it could be the major storyline, that and Darvish, that you look back on when you're doing the postmortem of the 2018 season.
Yeah. I mean, as of right now, the story is probably Yu Darvish not being what he is, and then, you know, maybe Jason Hayward. But yeah, if you talk about losing Chris Bryant from here on, and him coming back, even if he does and he's not the guy, I mean, that's it. You know, that's the season for the Cubs. You know, basically, what can they do without two major pieces contributing the way they're expected to?
Yeah. And I think they can still make the playoffs. I think that's really obvious. I think they can still win the division. They could even still have the best record in the National League. I don't think that, because they are so deep, that's not a question at all. But I don't see, without contribution from Rizzo and Bryant, I don't see them winning a World Series this year.
No, and you talk about like the pitching that everyone keeps wanting them to go get with Jacob deGroms and now Chris Archer. Rumors are appearing again, because of course they are. They're like Rattatats and the grass and Pokemon. You find them everywhere. But
reference, good job.
Thank you. But the problem is, if the Cubs really wanted these guys, they have to trade from their depth. And you know, it's arguably easily to say right now that if the Cubs were to trade, the Cubs are nowhere without their depth right now. They're the best team in baseball because of their depth, because they can plug and play a guy like Ian Happ at third base from time to time, or they have a guy like David Bodie that can come up and do a little bit of everything and be successful. If you trade those pieces away, now you have maybe this pitcher that's going to pitch every fourth day, but what do we do now? Chesney Young doesn't seem like a guy I really want to call up and be David Bodie 2.0, you know, like,
right.
Tommy La Stella playing. Well, we just talked about how he hasn't been as great as he has been. Now he's a somewhat regular contributor. Ugh. It's not, you can't subtract from this team at this point, because right now they need every piece they have, and they clearly need more, but can't afford to lose what you have at the moment. So,
right. Like Mark Zagunas is a good AAA outfielder to have in a pinch. If somebody goes on the DL and you can bring him up, maybe start him a couple games and pinch hit him, match up, that kind of thing. But you don't want Mark Zagunas to be your Ian Happ. That would be a bad situation.
No. And people are going to say, oh, well, Chris Coughlin's in the minors. Bring Chris Coughlin up. No. That's not, he does not fix this. I love Chris Coughlin too, everyone, but no.
Yeah, no. All right. Well, I think we've beat this horse to death a little bit talking about Bryant. We talked about the trades. There's really no, you know, there might be a little bit of smoke, but there's no fire at this point on any trades. We'll talk about it once there is, but at this point, we're only speculating. The Archer thing that you brought up, I tend to agree. I think that's really posturing on one side or another, or maybe even both, to try and test and see what Archer's trade value is right now.
Right.
But yeah, that's not. If Archer were available and the Rays really did decide now is the time to trade him, I think they would field better offers than what the Cubs could give them. Because yes. I don't think they're looking, like, we can make the case that if the Mets wanted to trade DeGrom, that there is a case that they could want major league pieces like Ian Happ or Addison Russell, Mike Montgomery, that may be the case. With the Rays, they absolutely want prospects, and the Cubs can't match just about any other team in baseball for Archer in that way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it comes down to, unfortunately. But I mean, even looking too, like, the Rays are above 500 right now, right? Like, I mean, they're clearly a non-factor in that division with two really, really good teams. But are they? Yeah, they are. They're 52-50. So, I mean, like, you know, nothing special, but yeah, hard to argue or hard to say that this team needs to rebuild. I mean, clearly they've got pieces. They've got young players coming. Trading Chris Archer when he's so controllable and cheap. And only, I mean, this is his age 29 or 30 season. I mean, like, why trade him unless you're getting a massive haul, which the Cubs can't do. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, 52-50, you know, for the National League fan would say, oh, well, I mean, they're in the wild card chase. No, they're 9 games out of the second wild card. The Oakland A's are 1.5 games out of the second wild card. And if they were in the National League, they would have basically tied for the best record in the league.
They
have more wins. They have 60 wins. The Cubs are the best record in the National League with 59. So they're basically like right there with each other.
Yeah. No, it's just that it's not going to happen, folks. Don't know what to tell you other than that.
All right. Let's wrap on that. We'll go to the final segment. We can just talk about the National League Central a little bit. So good things happened for the Cubs in the National League Central. It was basically like the mirror reaction of the day before when the Cubs won, or when the Cubs lost and everybody else won. Yesterday, the Cubs won, everybody else lost. So Washington Nationals salvaged game with the Brewers in their series, beating them 7-3 behind a strong effort from Tanner Roark. The Pirates finally lost, being shut out by the Indians 4-0. The Cardinals and Jack Flaherty got beat up by the Reds 7-3. So the updated standings are the Cubs go back to 2.5 games up, now 59-42. The Brewers are 58-46. The Pirates drop to 53-50, now 7 games back. The Cardinals go back to 500 at 51-51, now 8.5 games back. And the Reds are 45-57, 14.5 games back. So not a whole lot changed over the last couple of days in the division. The Cubs have, you know, they were 3.5 games up. Now they're 2.5 games up. They're kind of keeping the Brewers a little bit at a distance. The Pirates are where they are, but nobody expects that they're actually getting back in the divisional race. The Cardinals are really at an arm's distance. If the Cubs take 2 out of 3 this weekend, that's like the last nail in their coffin. They pretty much have to sweep the Cubs in that series in St. Louis, and I don't see that happening. So that's kind of what we have with the NL Central right now. It's just what we talked about. The Cubs are in first place, their best record in the National League. If they were in the American League, it'd be a completely different story, but you know, that's what we have right now.
Yeah. Just to clarify too, the Rockies did acquire Seungwon Oh yesterday. I forgot to mention that. So he's not an option anymore, just so people don't blow us up in our tweet mentions. Oh, well, it's a Rocky bubble. Yeah, we know. It's just it was an idea. But going back to the NL Central here. Yeah, I mean, not much is changing at this point. I mean, the Cubs don't necessarily have like a strong hold on the division. Clearly they could get swept and the Brewers could win. And, you know, now they're, you know, a half game back. But, you know, I mean, right now, the way things are playing out, it seems like exactly what we're kind of expecting. The Cubs to kind of find themselves in the top of this division. If they get some guys healthy or get some pitching that could really be effective on a consistent basis, that would be huge. That'd probably give them the lead necessary that would pretty much take them through to the playoffs. But, you know, here we are right now. So it'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, I don't think I'd be too worried about the Cardinals taking 2 or 3 from the Cubs here. I think they'll probably win that series this weekend. But beyond that, I mean, the Cubs just gotta grind here. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and, you know, even if the Cubs lose 2 out of 3, it, you know, at worst, that means they have a 6.5 game lead, you know, from today till the end of that series. So, you know, 6.5 game lead is pretty strong heading into August. So, yeah, the Cubs are in a good position despite all the problems that they have. This has been a really weird season just for the fact that they've had starting pitching problems. They've had injury problems. The guys that you expect to be good haven't been good. The guys that you expect to not be as great have been excellent. It's been kind of an upside down season, and the result is they're in first place. So I guess just ride the wave.
Yeah, apparently you're not supposed to do the wave at Wrigley, but here we are, you know. But yeah, no, it's been interesting. I would argue that this season's been more frustrating than last season. I just think the moments or the people that were, you know, getting frustrated with the Cubs are, you know, I don't know what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that I think this season could arguably be more, if the Cubs weren't in first place, people would be far more upset than they were last year, I think, which is crazy to think because they finished below 500 for the first half.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. But there was also the, hey, they just won the World Series, I'm giving them a pass kind of thing. I think there are a lot of people who prior to 2016 was like, if they won a World Series, I wouldn't care if they never made the playoffs again in my life, just win the one time. So there was a lot of goodwill in the first half of 2017.
That's true. Plus, it was awesome. The first came back when they walked out on the field and Rizzo held the trophy up like he was Rocky. It was, yeah. Memories.
Yep. Good memories. All right. Well, that's it for Locked On Cubs, episode 112. Thanks for listening. This is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. You can find my work occasionally at The Athletic. You can find me at Bet Chicago. I'm pinch hitting for Tony Andracki on NBC Sports Chicago this weekend as the Cubs beat reporter in St. Louis, so you'll be able to catch my work at NBC Sports there. So follow me on Twitter for that. I'm at Ryan Q Davis, and I'll let Sean tell you where you can find him.
Yeah, of course. I'm mainly contributing these days at NBC Sports. Still plan on writing for Locked On Cubs at some point. I've got a piece planned for you here in a little bit. I'll talk to you about it after the show, Ryan. but still doing some stuff for FanSided. And then, of course, I have my radio show and podcast, 312, that's live every Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. on WCGO 1590 a.m. in Evanston, Chicago. And then I, you can follow me at Twitter at Sean R. Sears. And, yeah, that's about it.
All right. We will talk to you again tomorrow.